Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 113, Bob Steele. Hope you remember Bob. Bob was episode number 60, and in this episode we catch up. In this segment, we're going to catch up on what's happening with his business. Let me tell you, he's crushing it, well over seven figures. Had his first six-figure month, non-Q4, last month. Are you having a six-figure month last month? Did you have a six-figure month? We didn't. He is so humble. He acts like it's no big deal because in his mind, it really isn't. And quite frankly, I believe that he's capable of so much more. He's just such a great guy. We catch up and just really impressed with everything that Bob does. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest, you know, I think he's kind of a stranger to a lot of people just because he keeps such a low profile. But man, is he killing it, Bob Steele. Welcome, Bob.
Nice to be back, Steve.
It is the second time around. You were episode number 60. So if you want to go find out about Bob's background, although we'll touch on some of it today, but it's a very interesting background, and he's an amazing seller, very giving seller, very real, you know. And pre-show, we were talking about someone had called him out on some numbers he had, and he's like, oh, you think so? Here you go. Take a look. And he shared them. That takes some guts. So did that bother you when somebody calls you out like that? Or do you think it's just them not understanding?
There's always people that are negative. It doesn't really bother me.
Okay. All right. Well, I think people don't understand because they're not having that success, so they assume everybody else is also not having that success. You know, and my comment to that person is, hey, give it some time. You know, Bob's been selling for 5 years, and my bet is you made tremendous amounts of mistakes over those 5 years. Is that fair?
Yeah.
And so you've learned from them. So today you are a much different seller than you were 5 years ago.
Right. I made plenty of mistakes along the way, and I've changed the way I've done things.
You know, I got asked that question. I was on REA interviewed me for Fast Turn Radio the other day, and somebody or a couple people asked me, and I don't know if it made it in the show, maybe it was afterwards, they kept asking me, what did I learn from the podcast that I put into practice in our business? And I would say it, we've narrowed our focus. I walk away from so many things now that I've just learned, you know, yeah, that'd be okay, but that's not my thing, so narrow your focus and really get good at it. That's what I've learned. You, on the other hand, had a great year last year. You crushed it. As a matter of fact, I set my goal for this year before I talk with you. After I talk with you, I almost doubled my goal. And I'm like, you know, I set my goals way too low because you are a part-time seller. And I don't think people will understand that you'll hit seven figures this year without blinking an eye. I mean, you're way over the pace for that. And you're part-time. You're just part-time.
Yeah, it's a couple hours a day, basically, but I outsource. I have a little bit of help.
Right.
You know, I think one of the key things that you hear a lot of and you don't really realize is don't create yourself a job, run a business. And I think I'm finally switching that mode because I think for a while I created myself a job to get it to where the point is now, whereas now I just manage more.
Well, let's talk about that because there's a couple schools of thought. The fact that you learned how to do everything, I think, is a foundational a principle that I think some people are missing. When they go back, and if they never had to do it, they don't understand. When things don't go right, when Amazon makes a change, they change something in their system. It's very difficult to communicate that unless you have a foundational understanding. So I think there's value in learning how to do it yourself.
Oh, I definitely think that.
Yeah, because I see some people coming in and immediately outsourcing everything, and I'm like, man, you need to understand how difficult it is for a prep center to get that stuff done. Right. It's not just, you know, receive it, turn it around, and put it in a box and send it out. As you know, there's work involved, right? Lots of work.
Yeah, a lot of processing. Some of the products you don't even realize what the nuances of it are until you've touched it and seen it and dealt with it. And if you're just sending it out and you're like, well, why are we having so many problems with it? If you've never seen the product or how it's packaged or how certain distributors send things out and how certain manufacturers package things and you start getting all types of bad feedback, you don't even have a clue because you've never seen the product.
Well, give me an example. Do you have one that you can talk about?
Just sometimes, like, you'll get boxes in with, like, with an extra label on them that sort of shows what department it came from, whereas the prep center won't necessarily go and take that off, and it kind of gives away a lot of information. Like, it may have a distributor, it may have the end store name and stuff like that. And I think a lot of times the prep centers will probably just cover that up real quick. There's certain places that sell things as new, like Blink.com, for example. I get a lot of stuff from them. I'd say a good percentage of it goes back because it doesn't match up. It's pulled from Amazon in the first place, and it's just a headache. So, I mean, stuff from companies like that I wouldn't ship to a prep center.
Yeah, there's a brand of shoes that we sell, and they have two barcodes on the box. And if you cover the one, no problem, but the second one doesn't get covered, it can and will slow down your inventory at the warehouse because their computers are going to read every size of that, every side of that box, and they see another barcode. It's like, whoa, that's not your barcode, Steve. That's a generic UPC code that you didn't cover. And so if you don't know that, now you can require your prep center to do that, but how do you communicate that, right? Are you saying to them, because, you know, you sell shoes too. When you get them, most of the time, and they're coming in case packed, lots of times I never even open them, you know, unless I can tell the case was open prior. I might pull a pair out just to glance at and make sure the condition's right. But I'm not pulling the box out, looking all around all the sides unless I know that vendor is that way. I think that's the way prep centers do it too. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, they probably don't get, because they have so much volume, I don't think they can get down and actually inspect every item as you would yourself. And you're lucky enough to get case pack. I'm still doing mostly RA and OA for shoes.
Well, if you do wholesale, I mean, it's the way they come wholesale. But, you know, here's a lesson. So Leron Hirschkorn, Asad Siddiqui, and myself went to a shoe show in New York City maybe a month ago, maybe a little bit longer. And Leron and I bought shoes from a particular vendor, one that she remembered me from the prior year, and I couldn't buy anything. I couldn't get a good enough price on them, right, because they sell directly to Amazon, and Amazon is not even though they said they would agree to MAP, they don't. They sell it for whatever they want, and so they really underprice themselves, right, and they're not happy with it. And so I was like, hey, let's start the relationship, and we negotiate. Well, let's give full credit. I negotiate a good deal for some closeout shoes. I negotiate a good deal. And then Leron steps in and negotiates a better deal. He does. I mean, he absolutely does, and in fairness. And so we both ordered it. We get them. He's like, Steve, did you get those shoes in? I said, yeah, I did. I just stacked them in the warehouse. I was behind. And he's like, take a look at this. He sends me pictures, and the shoes are scuffed. The bottoms of them are dirty. Now, these are brand new shoes that we're buying from the manufacturer. And they're all leather, and so scuffed leather is not good, right? Shoes are dirty. And he opened a few more boxes, like, oh, my God. At that point, he thought I sent mine in already. I didn't look at them. But I'll be honest, I never really did. I immediately went, opened mine, filthy just like his. We returned them. The vendor was good, and they returned them, and they accepted them. I guess they must be store returns. And then that's why we got such a good deal, right? Well, we bought new shoes. So my point is that you really do have to open those boxes, look at them at least once or twice until you're comfortable with the vendor. Now, this vendor, my conversation with them is, look, we want to buy new product. New means, because he was like, well, sometimes they're dirty. I'm like, we don't want those. Those are used. We don't want used. We want new. And so we'll see if we'll still do business with them. But it's a lesson. How about you? So what's your process? You now outsource a lot of the prep work. But walk me through the process of before you outsourced. What was your process like?
I was basically just getting all the shipments in and running through it as fast as I could. But I was spending, you know, from the minute I woke up to the minute I went to bed, basically prepping stuff and processing stuff.
When you got home, were you stacked with boxes in front of your house every
Sometimes.
Day?
Sometimes.
Yeah, and so you had to take those, bring them in, you know, unpack them, do whatever. Did you have any of them that you had to bag or separate in special boxes?
Not too much. I don't do any bundles. And when I first started, I really didn't do a lot of clothing. I did a lot more toys back then.
A lot of the toys, though, because of the plastic, the flimsiness of the plastic and stuff, I've been bagging all that stuff myself when I send it in because it's just getting destroyed.
Right.
Okay. So
I think I probably over-prepped a lot back when I started.
Cool.
Did you? Yeah. Well, did you have a lot of returns or anything? Did you get a lot of claims for, you know, not condition, not as sold as described or anything like that?
I got a few of them, but not an outlandish amount or anything like that.
So maybe then you didn't over prep. Maybe you just prepped enough. You know, Andy's always the same way. You got to bag everything anymore. You
That's
almost
what I used
have to.
Do.
To. Yeah. Well, it's almost like that right now with a lot of the toys. Again, a lot of the plastic is real flimsy in the windows. Mm-hmm. Some of them I actually even box when they're really low quality. There was a RC car. I forget who it was. Jam products or whatever. It was a hot toy. Walmart, Kmart, whatever. And I had to box them in a separate box and said, you know, ready to ship because it was, I know it wouldn't survive the warehouse.
Right.
There's
that's
no
plastic
way.
Plastic and the glue, all the glue comes off.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, and you know, you got to think about the temperature changes in the truck. Right now, for example, it's 90 degrees in my town. Mm-hmm. How hot is it in that UPS truck when it gets in there and then the warehouse and then the transportation truck, right? And then, you know, where it goes across the country. Okay, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to start answering some questions from Fast Turn Radio. It's a group run by Dwayne Malik. It's got about 2,800 members now. I didn't realize how large it's gotten. It's a free group. You got a request to get in, but I think some of the questions will be really good for you. I think they'll be relevant. We'll take a quick break. Hope you're having a great 2016. We know we are. It is a great year. Second quarter, looking pretty strong. We're in shoes and clothing. We think you should be too. If you are thinking about it, look at yoursourcedinventory.com. That's yoursourcedinventory.com. We're members. Listen to these stats. March, average shoe rank, $7,290 with a selling price of $89.42. Now think about that. That high selling price is where you're going to benefit. $31.40 profit, 80% return of investment. That's incredible. Clothing, average clothing rank was $8,966. Average selling price, $46.06. Again, you don't have to sell as many items to get that profit. Average profit, $16.99, almost 17 bucks. That is a great deal. 94% return of investment. That's yoursourcedinventory.com. Think about getting that clothing list, that shoe list sent to you 5 days a week, once a day. Take advantage. You'll grow your business as much as we have. Yoursourcedinventory.com. Thanks. Telling you, smart guy. Okay, in this segment, we're going to answer some questions from Fast Turn Radio. That's Dwayne Malik's group, which is a free group to join. But, you know, he has to know that you're real and wants to really help you. And a lot of great questions get asked there and answered. And so we both take a stab at some of the questions, and I think they're really well suited for Bob. And we spend some time talking about Q4. Bob already placed his big order for Q4, his first big order for Q4, and he's just getting started. Did you? I know we didn't, and so now I feel behind the eight ball, right? So I think this is a great point to look back at your business, look back at last year, and now take action. These are the couple weeks right now that you really want to take action in your business. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Bob Steele, who, you know, we didn't get to, by the way, how big of a year you're going to have. I said you're going to be over seven figures, but you had a great year last year. Why? What's different this year from last year? Before I get into the question, because I don't want to lose that, because you really seem to have hit a stride. Like, I mean, you're making it look easy, Bob, which is really scary because you're full-time employed by another company. I mean, you have a full-time big job. You've been there a long time.
Yeah, I've been there 30 years.
So what's different?
I think I just felt more comfortable with buying larger quantities and certain items, buying all of someone had. Whereas before, I'd buy 5 or 10 and then wait and try and go back and get more. And I think I'm just more comfortable with knowing what's going to sell and how long it's going to take to sell. I've also done a lot more shoes and clothing type stuff, which raises the ASP. It raises the profit per sale. Last year, I think I did probably $70,000, $75,000 worth of Trader Joe's stuff that I basically almost walked away from this year, and I kept about 10 replens from them.
So you learned what not to sell because of the hassle and versus the reward.
Right. It was like maybe 150-200% ROI on some of the products, and I sell a bunch of them, but it was, you know, $1.50, $2 a sale, and then you have to copy the ASIN because the barcodes don't scan, and it wasn't time well invested. It was just a lot of work.
So, I mean, is there a point where you'll just walk away from a project? I mean, is there a number in your mind you're just like, nah, not worth it?
Yeah, it's probably past that already, but I'm still hanging on.
You got a few, you're still hanging on. I think about, you know, I see deals and I'm always like, oh, I get the urge, you know, it's like, oh my God, but I can just turn those so quick. And it's, you know, but then I think, wait, it's $3 profit.
Right.
Do I really want to do that for $3? Because if a bunch of them get returned or if there's a problem, it's probably where I could just buy, like you say, a pair of shoes and make, you know, $30, $40 on that. And it's a lot easier to prep shoes than it is. Okay. All right. I think I'm comfortable with what you're doing. You're just hitting your stride. You figured things out. Your prep company – now, were you with the prep company completely last year or did you change mid-year?
No, I started probably right around this time last year.
Okay, so then that
– And I was just sending them the tax stuff and still trying to do the tax-exempt stuff myself. So now I've actually got another place where I can send the stuff that won't go to the prep center, like Target won't ship to the prep center. I actually have someone that'll handle that stuff. And I've started doing a lot more outlet shopping, and Rhonda's been helping me do all that stuff, and she's actually learning to list now too. So while she's listing, I could be on the computer still ordering away and not even spend the time doing that stuff.
Yeah, you're not doing the heavy RA that you were doing prior, are you?
It's mostly – she'll go to TJ Maxx a few times a week, and we'll go on the weekend. I mean, an hour, $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 in TJ Maxx is all it takes.
And then
we'll go to the outlets, and I'll spend, you know, $2,000, $3,000 a store. But we won't do that every weekend.
Yeah, that would be tough to do every weekend. Okay. All right. Here's the questions I have. Let's start with this one. In this case, this is a tip from a UPS store employee. If you have your own UPS account, you can order special boxes from UPS for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use them to put bundles together or particular items that need to be boxed for packaging. And I note that you can get labels and sheet-fed labels, label rolls and sheet-fed labels from UPS. Have you ever heard of that, and have you ever tried that service?
Yeah, I get their labels all the time.
Okay.
The boxes I've had, I don't, like I said, I don't do a lot of bundles. So I know they're available. I know there's two sizes, and they probably are good for bundling. I just don't, like I said, I don't do a lot of it, so I don't really have a use for it that much.
So where are you buying your boxes generally?
Lowe's or Home Depot.
Okay, so Lowe's, Home Depot. You haven't jumped into the U-Haul? I've heard that there's a great buys at U-Haul.
No.
And they deliver them to you?
Yeah, Home Depot delivers to me too.
Oh, okay. So
I think they're $1.50 for a 24, 18, 18, which is
and that meets the requirement, and you don't have to pay a premium for that shipping size.
Right.
Okay. All right. So you have used the labels. They're free, very efficient. I'm going to try the boxes because that's a good idea. I just thought, wow, that's interesting. I mean, we use a lot of boxes. And these are not boxes for shipping in your whole orders. These are for smaller items that you have to box up. And again, we have some products that, especially if you sell in the toy category, where they have those really flimsy plastic windows, you really do need to find a way to protect them. Okay. Here's one. Would you spend $25 to profit $5 per item? But here's the caveat. If you sell 50 a day, would you do it?
Yep.
Now you would. Now, would you process them yourself?
Product of not having returns.
Yeah. Well, and that's not in the formula, right? Would you outsource that to your prep center?
Depends what it was. If it's easy, no.
Okay. So what's easy to you? Give me an example of an easy item. Don't tell me a real item,
just
but make
come in
you know,
and label it and ship it back out.
So it's already sealed. You're just popping it on, putting a label on it, and sending it. Do you co-mingle at all?
I have on a couple occasions. One of the relationships I started with someone that owns a large restaurant supply store, and he's come to me with deals, and he'll ship it right to Amazon for me. So I just ship that stuff stickless, co-mingled.
And no problems?
Nope. It's just been a couple products, but I've tried doing stickless co-mingle. I know other people recommended it, but I find out that half the shipment needs to be stickered anyways, and then you just ended up with two shipments going to the same warehouse and still separating it. So I'll just label my own stuff.
So in an item like this, where you're going to sell 50 of them a day, that means you're sending in, you know, hundreds of them a week. I mean, you know, 1,000 a week or whatever it is. Would you consider commingling that?
Probably.
Again, not knowing what it is.
I could prove the source to Amazon if there was ever an issue, yeah. If it was a reliable source.
Okay. So if it was a good wholesale company that you have no problem with there.
From my understanding, even if your sticker was commingled, once it gets there, Amazon's tracking your exact product anyways.
Okay. But because they're putting it in a location in the warehouse.
Right.
The closest spot in the warehouse that they can get to where it'll fit.
So if
right?
there was an inauthentic claim, they'd actually know whose account it came from, even if it was sticker was commingled. Mm-hmm. So I've been told. I'm certainly not the expert of inside Amazon information.
Are you buying a lot of wholesale? I know you're a big online ARB guy, but are you buying a lot of wholesale too?
I don't.
Which is surprising because that's what you do for your company.
Yeah, I have one wholesale account that actually has access to 200 or 300 different manufacturers. They do a lot of Christmas stuff, and I went through maybe 10% of the spreadsheet they sent me and ordered $20,000 worth of stuff that's coming next month.
Oh,
it was to manage the just going through it and checking everything. And it was mostly the same stuff that I had bought RA over the last few years. And now I don't have to worry about covering up the Walmart prices on five sides of the boxes and stuff like that, where I'm just getting it right from the manufacturer and for less than I pay RA, even with discounts and coupons.
So it is less. That's the point, right? So you were able to get it wholesale because that's not what you normally hear, right? Usually it's a Keystone markup. If it's selling for $10, you're paying $5 wholesale. Mm-hmm. That's not the case in these scenarios?
No, I think the Walmart price was $33 and my wholesale price was maybe $19, and then they usually sell for about $60 or so at Christmas time.
So that's significant.
Another item I was getting last year, the list price was $20. I was getting it for $16 after discounts, and now those are $12.50.
How did you find the wholesaler?
Just went by on the back of the box. It tells you who the distributor is and who the manufacturer is, and I just followed the chain. And they actually had a local rep that came into my office with like a giant catalog and all the little yellow stickies. And I said, no. Come sit down on my computer and I'll show you what I do with the data file. And by the end of the next day, I had a data file with 20,000 line items.
And he knew that you're an online seller.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get offended,
nope.
Didn't care.
Not at all.
Does it require a map?
They didn't have me sign a map agreement.
Okay, so they're like, hey, we need to move inventory. And I think
and he actually went through the catalog and highlighted all the stuff that he says these are good sellers every year. This is a hot category all the time.
And that's one of that's exactly where I was going to go. That's one of the benefits of going to a trade show or a wholesale show or an ASD or something like that. They'll tell you, if you're smart enough to ask them and say, hey, what are your hottest sellers? And if they say black shoes and white shoes, our hottest colors. Right, and you're thinking, oh, these flashy yellow, orange, green. Nobody buys that. It's black and white, right? And they'll tell you if it's transferable to online. The same people, you know, the people in the stores who buy black and white shoes, they're online buying those same black and white shoes. So that's the right question to ask. You know, is hey, what's hot?
Right.
Show me what's popular. And so the rep came. You've been buying from them, or you are getting them. Are you getting them sent to a prep center, or are you going to handle that yourself?
No, I handle that myself. It's
okay, because it's easy again,
it's easy,
right?
And for my full-time job, I have access to a loading dock, so it'll just get there, it'll be turned around, it'll be back on the truck the next day.
So you will send it all in? You won't hold any of it back?
No, I'll just send it all in.
You just
I don't
want
to store it.
Okay, I like it.
Nothing
like
really
it.
Huge anyways, not big items, so the storage fees won't be that much, and by the time I get it in mid-August and send it in, it'll be September 1st, and everyone will stop buying for Christmas anyways.
Will this are you counting on higher Q4 prices because it's seasonal?
No, they're seasonal products, so.
Okay, so they're only going to sell that time.
Right.
So if you look at them now, the rank's going to be terrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say it's Christmas trees. This is probably not a good time to sell Christmas, although if you sell.
Yep.
I mean, I sold Martha Stewart Christmas lights for a long time, right?
I'm still selling star showers one or two a week.
You still are. That's still out there. Okay, so, and I thought they were restricted, and I don't want to know. Anyway, but Christmas trees in the month of probably September. October, November getting real heavy, and then December, pretty hot and heavy, right? So that price will, I don't know if it'll rise, it'll get to its capacity, I would, maybe that's a better way to say it, right? Did you buy enough to start selling in October, November? What's your thinking?
I basically went by what I had for sales volume the previous years and how long the prices held. And I think one of the strategies that I'll have is if I can get them in early enough before they become available retail, I'll get some sales before everyone else gets them in and cuts the prices down.
So you, yeah, there's a nugget for everyone, right? So he's going to get the first sale, and the first sale will be the highest price before competition, right? Supply and demand, before that comes in and lowers the prices. And you'll make the most profit that you can, right?
Right.
And so overall, you could ride down, as Matt Kelly says, as long as you bought it at the right price, and clearly you did, you could ride that down a long way. And worst case scenario is break even on the tail end, and you're way ahead mm-hmm. of most everybody else, especially if they were buying them retail arb and seeing the price at 60, 65, thinking, hey, at $33, I'm doing well, right. Making $10, $12, where here you're making $20-something dollars. So very good. I like it. I like it. So when do you think they'll start selling your Christmas stuff?
Traditionally, I've noticed they start selling around September.
Okay, so beginning or probably after school starts.
Yeah,
right
after the back-to-school season. The people that are hot and heavy for Christmas, they start setting up their lights Labor Day and have them all ready for Thanksgiving and before that. And
okay, so there's another pro tip, right? Now, I think you're going to get Halloween.
And I think I have Halloween stuff in with the Christmas stuff too.
So okay. Okay. Yeah. That would make sense to me. So you're getting both in mm-hmm. just because you want to get them out of your way. But I think the Halloween stuff will sell pretty quick. And I think Christmas is right in that period of time when people are buying, because they're going to set it up. They're going to take down their Halloween stuff and immediately set up their Christmas stuff. I agree with you there. All right. Got another cool one. And it's about repricer. And the basic premise is this, is that somebody was looking at how the larger selling accounts have set up their repricer. And basically the premise that he noticed is that it looks like they are focused on profit, not on the highest revenue. And it's interesting to me. What's your thoughts on that?
I have a repricer set. I always have it set to price above the competition. But I also...
Well, wait, above the competition. Okay. So you're selling, we both start selling something at $25. Mm-hmm. You're coming in, your pricer is going to say, hey, Steve's at 25, let's go to 25.10.
Right, yeah, something like that.
Not 25.09, which most people would do.
Yeah, I think, well, I was born on Friday the 13th, so I think I actually have a 13 cents above the $5.
So you think that pricing above...
Well, I just What's know it? That there's so many people that have the repricer set, I want the buy box and I want 2 cents cheaper. And then the other repricer comes in, I want 2 cents cheaper than that. And they're just watching themselves go down.
And so you don't even participate because you're going to be priced above them. And as long as you're priced above them, it's not adjusting. Or as they go down, do you go down
It'll
but
go
stay
down
above
with
them?
So it gets to my min, but
okay.
I want to turn stuff. I don't want to be sitting on it and waiting to see if it comes back in a couple months. If I made a buy and... by the time I send it in, it's at a break-even point, it's on to the next product. I'm not going to sit there and lose sleep over it.
Now, do you set your repricer product by product, or do you have it set by category?
I have so many products, it's just by formula.
Okay, so it's a generic one for overall.
Yeah. Or else I'd spend too many hours just setting up a repricer to sell. I mean, for the specific products that I sell a lot of volume of, I have it set the way I want to have it set, but a lot of the RA stuff I do, it's one-offs, two-offs, stuff like that. I just want to turn and burn, just get through them.
Hmm. I like it. I like your answers. I think you're spot on. So I'm sitting here talking to somebody who's going to crush the seven-figure number this year, and you just missed it last year. And if I remember correctly, it was because you moved, and that's when I really felt small because I'm like, are you kidding me? But you have a very big full-time job. Like you said, you've been there for 30-plus years. Lots of good benefits. Great job. You're not leaving it yet.
Tempted.
You're part-time. Yeah, I know you get tempted. Hey, we all do. You get your part-time, you put in a lot of hours. You say a couple hours a day, every day, and you probably work weekends, I assume, a little bit.
Yeah, but we like it. It's like we'll go to probably a couple stores, spend a couple hours, go to lunch, you know, take our time. We enjoy it. It's not like we go and get up at 6 in the morning and hit one store and go shop until 10 o'clock at night. It usually will go to a couple places and buy a large volume.
So are you 20 hours a week? Is that a fair number? 30 hours? What would you say?
Yeah, probably 20.
Okay, so 20 hours a week, but yet you can scale to that level. And I know there's a whole bunch of people that are sitting here saying, I can't get past $30,000 a month, $25,000 a month. I'm crushing myself to get there and stay there. And here you're just had your over six-figure month, first one since non-Q4, right? That was your phrase. And you're doing that. So give us something that you think that, you know, because you were back at that place too where you were at the $25,000 mark, the $30,000 mark. What are some of the things that people should be doing today to scale past that now that you know that? Because you know it. You've proven it. Let's say you've been doing it for 5 years.
Right. And I haven't taken money out. Some people need the money to live. They need to pay their monthly expenses. I've constantly reinvested all the money I got back into purchasing more inventory. I think over 5 years, I've taken out maybe $20,000.
So you have a large sourcing budget. That's correct. One piece of advice, right? Yeah. You could buy and you can buy deep.
And I get to the point now where I do so much OA that the cash back sites cover my monthly expenses.
Yeah, I saw that comment that you had in another thing too. It's true because you're really killing it on that end too. And so having a large sourcing budget, that's key number one.
Right.
Okay, give me some other keys.
Utilize the cash back as much as you can and the discounted gift cards. Because, I mean, one example I'll use is I buy stuff from Target. Well, I use my Veterans Advantage discount where I get $7 off of $70.
That's 10%.
That's 10%. So I place a bunch of small orders. I get 4% cash back from, I forget which one it is, Coupon Cactus or one of them. It's 5% with the Target card. Now, I'll give everyone a little nugget here. Steve likes his nuggets.
I do.
If you go to checkout with your Target card and you get your 5% discount in the card, go and switch it to a Target gift card, which now you can buy for 6% off, and now you're getting 11% off.
All right, hold on. Let's go back to the nugget. All right, let's just pull back. I want the nugget. So I use my 5% Target discount gift card.
So you have to go back to checking out with your Target card, then go back and edit your payment method and put in a gift card. You're still going to get your 5%, and you're going to get the money you saved on your on your gift card.
So do you physically go and buy a gift card?
I buy them all. Actually, I just got approved as a bulk buyer because I buy so much. So I can actually get a better rate than everyone else can get on Raise or Card Cash or any of them.
So you bought the Target gift card for 6% off.
Yep.
Then you get in line. They give you the red card discount. You go back and you modify your thing, and you can another 6% off because you already got 6% when you
pay. You get 11% on the payment. You get 10% on the 70 off of 70, and you get 4% cash back. So you're at 25% before you make any money selling the product.
And if it's a good – yeah, that's right. And so how do you compete? So people always say this, right? I buy that shampoo for $10. It's no cheaper price. You can't get it cheaper than I can. Yes, you can. Bob's buying it for $7.50, right? Is that
much,
fair?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it's hard for people to get their – I mean, it's a lot of work. It's probably a lot of maintenance to keep track of, and I can't imagine the accounting nightmare that it creates. Anna Hill right now, her hair standing up thinking about it, right? But 25% off of a pretty good priced item that – I mean, answer this. Do you look for it to give you an established return before you consider that,
yes.
And then that's just the gravy?
Exactly.
Like, okay, so there's a pro tip.
Like if I go through and I use tactical arbitrage or OA X-ray, I'm looking for minimum 20-25% just on pure profit before I factor in everything else. And that gives me a buffer if the price tanks a little bit or you know,
Matt
shipping,
Kelly.
Stuff like that, storage fees.
Right, and I just got hit with storage fees this month, right? I just got it this week, actually. I was like, whoa, what happened there? And it's like, oh, storage fees. So That's another pro tip, though. So because you're looking for an established profit, acceptable level for you, as you say, if the price tanks, you could drive it down another 25-30%, and you're still making money. Or you could go, in your case, almost 50% down and break even.
Right.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. That's wholesale, in essence. Right? I mean, it really is. Wholesale, but that you can't buy.
You can't get cash back on wholesale. I mean, you might be able to get 2% on your credit card,
right?
Which is another 2% I get for buying the gift cards on my credit card.
Right. So, okay. All right. So I hope people get that. I know that sounds complicated, but listen to it a couple different times to get it. If you don't understand that, listen to it a couple different times. He does a great job explaining it. I'm not going to go any deeper on it. It's a lot of work. Don't do it if you're new. Get there. When you want to, I was just giving some advice to someone. It's that you want to fine tune your business over time. When you start, you know, you get to the level of revenue that you really want to be at, then you want to really enhance your profit margin. Of course, you want to try and do it all along, but you're trying to scale to a certain place, and maybe you're at a 17% margin, and you're saying, all right, I'm doing $500,000, and I got 17%. Okay, now let's get that to 20%. What's best practice? 25%. Mm-hmm. So these small changes, the incremental changes, will get you from there to there, but if you keep your revenue stationary, if you can go from 17% to 25%, that's what, $40,000,
right,
on that same sales without, you know, it's a half of an employee without doing anything but just enhancing your own business. So very, very cool.
I've also increased my ASP a lot more. So I'm selling higher priced items, so I'm making more dollars per sale.
But handling fewer items.
Away.
Well, in your case, you're not handling fewer items because you're still growing. But you could handle fewer items, just keep raising your average selling price, and your sales could stay the same, right?
Right.
That's not a bad business model, is it? Do you have any exclusive accounts that you work on or anything that, you know, I guess since you're doing mostly OA or retail arb, I guess not.
No.
No? Okay. All right. No problem. Okay, let's talk about what's going on with you. So you were crushing it. Everything's going great. Again, you're like Brianna Muller Green, not busy enough. You get into business with her and you do EPS.
Yeah.
And EPS is a group. It's a site. It's a group. It's a whole lot of things. Let's talk about it.
We started, I think I mentioned this the last time, but I had one VA that was doing something for me personally, and I said, let's share him one thing. Grew to another, and it actually turns out that we had trained a bunch of VAs, and people were interested in, I forget exactly how it came up, but they're like, well, what about rent a VA? So we actually got a website called va.rentals, and we started off with doing sourcing blocks where, hey, you know, you want a VA that we've already trained, you tell us the criteria you want, the categories you want, the sources you want, sourced and not sourced. It will have them make exclusive lists just for you, and you'll own them. So then it went from there, and then Brianna and Kyle Wright have been doing merch stuff on the VA Rentals website where they're researching designs, and they have a bunch of designers creating shirts, and they're doing keywords, and it's just like blown way out of the water. And like merch isn't really my thing, but they've really worked hard and really got the systems in place for that.
It's a really complete website. I'll have a link for it. It's really, you know, they will do a couple different things. So Merch by Amazon, mm-hmm. which is a big deal, and they'll help you with that. And Brianna, her story on how she handles that, it's just incredible. Product sourcing and category ungating. I guess there still are some categories that are hard to get ungated in, right?
Yeah, it's something we kind of threw up there. We haven't really promoted or done anything with it. When we've all done ungatings, it's not something we'd actually have a VA do because
we would do it ourselves,
but it's not something we really promoted. And I think for a while Amazon just left the door wide open, and we didn't feel right charging people to ungate them when they could just go in and say, I want approval, and they would just hit a button and they'd be approved, which I'm not sure if that's still the case or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure that is a case. I think it comes in waves.
Yeah.
And I think some of it depends on people's metrics. Some people get offered, some people don't. Okay, so EPS stands for Elite Product Sourcing. That's the list service where you send out lists. Now, that model has changed a little bit, right?
Yeah, we still have a daily email list, and we still have VA Source Mastermind groups, but we've also started doing some specialty lists on Gumroad.
Right, and are very store-specific, right?
Yeah, store or category-specific. Because we asked people what they wanted, and they said, hey, I want, you know, all from the same store, or all health and beauty, or all shoes. So instead of just having a mixed list, we try to specialize it more.
And you limit on those, you limit them to 10 or 20 people. I see the list come
out.
Yeah,
I mean, something that has like a bunch of variations, like shoes and clothing, we may have more. But if it's like a health and beauty and it's all replens, you know, we'll limit that to 10 people.
And generally speaking, when somebody gets one of those lists, and it's very inexpensive, and let's just say it's a TJ Maxx list, generally speaking, these are things you could go back on a regular basis and find some of them on a regular basis, like you call a replen.
Right.
And so you can establish some foundational blocks for your business, right? You might not make as much money. I mean, these aren't the one, you know, where the one-hit wonders, because they were one hit, right? These are things that you can make a nice steady building a business, right? Make a nice steady return of investment.
Well, the key to the list is, and a lot of people don't see this, is to build from what's there. It's like, let's take for an example, I had a list probably a couple months ago that one of the VAs had gone to Vitacost and found some brand medicine that I had never heard of. Well, now you take that brand and you go through Vitacost and you go through Amazon and you cross-link them using OA X-ray or whatever software you're using. Well, now that one find became probably 8 replens that I have now by doing an extra 5 minutes worth of work. Sometimes they'll find websites that you never really heard of. They had one last week that specialized in gardening supplies. I went on Amazon, found out that the only person selling any of that stuff was the same company, merchant fulfilled with shipping charges. And when the stuff went on clearance on the website, it was still full price on Amazon. So that's the type of stuff you get from a list. Instead of saying, here's 10 items, go buy these 10 items. It's using that as a foundation to build from it.
You know, here's another piece of advice is that it also helps you. You should, you know, spend a little bit of money to see what a list looks like.
Right.
Because if you're having trouble finding products, mm-hmm. here are some products that you should be looking for. It'll make you say, wait, I never looked in that category before. I never thought about looking at toothpaste. I never thought about looking at blah, 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 blah. That's what a lot of the value is, because it's going to make you say, uh-huh, I've seen that before. I walk right past it.
Right.
I think there's value in that, too. And it's such an inexpensive way to get into
mm-hmm.
it.
I think I sold a list, this was a couple months ago, and I do a lot of TJ Maxx sourcing. I mean, Rhonda goes all the time. We do a ton from there. And you see the list. Okay, I bought this, and it's going to sell for this much. I actually went through my scan power reports and pulled what I actually sold. And that list went like crazy. It was sold out in a day.
Oh, hold on. There's another
approach.
Okay,
this is what I bought for $12.99, and I'm expecting to sell it for $30. I actually pulled a list of what really sold. And the way my SKU system is, it has a date in it, and it has the price I paid in it. So it was pretty simple just to back it out and get, okay, this is how long it took to sell. This is what I paid for it. This is what it sold for. And I calculate my ROI and margin and all that stuff.
This is a pro tip. There's going to be 2 points to this comment. First off, what you just said is genius. So you're saying, hey, go back and look at what you sold, whether you're on ScanPower, which I am, or Inventory Lab, or whatever it is. Sort it so you can see what actually sold, and most lists will show you what your cost is, what you paid for it, and what it sold for.
Mm-hmm.
That should be your sourcing list if you can sort it by store, which I know I can, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back to TJ Maxx, if that's your thing, and you look for those same products. You don't have to scan nothing.
Right.
You already know it.
I mean, once you do enough of a certain store, you realize which brands scan, which ones Amazon's on, which ones are profitable, which ones you just avoid.
So is that a good piece of advice for somebody to just focus on that store like TJ Maxx and just master it and just and seeing it? How often do you say Rhonda goes in there?
She goes 3-4 times a week.
Okay, so she knows it in and out. She knows the cashiers by name.
She probably knows
her kids' birthdays.
She really likes to go to. They walk out to the car with, like, it's a nice day. I want to go for a walk. Come help me load stuff up. I got 5 carriages lined up.
Yeah, they're exchanging. You know, you'd probably be on vacation with them soon. I mean
that
come
store
up.
Is so huge, we don't even have probably a quarter of it down pat. There's certain categories that we source, but there's probably a lot more in there that we don't see. And I don't type in anything that's not coming up with the barcode. My fingers are too big. I can't type on my little damn phone to figure out if it's listed or not and what the right style is. If it don't scan, it don't come home.
Yeah, it's me too. I'm with you. I don't want to – it's too much work. I don't want to work – it's a hassle. Everything's – if it's a hassle, I'm out.
And I know other people, I don't have any near me, but Ollie's I've heard is a really good source. So I guess it's kind of like a Big Lots. They have clothes out and stuff.
It's a hit or miss.
Stores that, yeah, I guess you can probably get in pretty good and realize – what you can continually go back for and what they get in.
And they'll negotiate with you, always will, for bulk purchases. Actually, they have a department for bulk purchases, too. So, and they'll handle tax exempt and everything like that. So, and lots of times, they, if you're a buyer, they send you 10% off coupons all the time. And they're almost always good. So that's another tip. This interview is coming out after after one that have, and I'm just going to give a little tease here. Here's another pro tip. So that list that you took and you downloaded of what you sold, you then should take and compare that list to other Amazon channels. Not Canada, according to Beaver. Stay away from Canada. Just, it won't sell. But .eu and Germany specifically. I have an interview that will come out next week. I'm on vacation next week, but it will come out next week. And we spend a lot of time talking about Europe because he's from Europe, and Germany specifically because it's really a booming community, and his software allows you to compare your Amazon listings to across multiple channels. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Awesome. Yeah, it's like, whoa, that really, you know, really interesting. But you could do it on your own. I mean, you could take your top-selling items and go and look and see what they're selling for in Europe and Germany and Japan, soon very heavy Japan. Japan's going to take off very, very soon with Amazon. It's probably poised to grow the most, the fastest very soon. So another, so that's a tease. Well, by now they would have already heard that. So they're going to be like, duh, Steve.
Okay. It's just a tease for me. Well,
yeah, it's a tease for you. So, but dude, I'm excited. What's next? What do you think? You're not busy enough. I mean, Lord knows you'll never retire. So what are you going to do next? I mean, what would you still enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoy what I do. I think I'm enjoying more, like I said at the beginning, running a business than creating a job.
Working on your business.
Right.
And that's an e-myth kind of thing, right? Work on your business, not in your business.
Right.
Any other plans that you're thinking? Anything that you'd say, I wish we could do this or...
Yeah, we're doing a lot more traveling. I think, and it's all your fault, Steve.
It's always my fault.
I went to a conference. Wanted to come see me. Which kind of like just blew me out of the water because usually I just sit in the corner. I don't talk to nobody. I'm very laid back, very shy. And now it's like since I've been – I think that was a Scam Power conference. I think I went to 3 in the next 2 months or something like that. And I actually made some good connections and have, you know, met some really great people because they were able to approach me. I was able to approach them and just open up a lot more than I had in the past.
Well, you have something in common with them. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but if you start talking about this stuff with any of your friends, they roll their eyes back, they, you know, doze off. Nobody wants to talk about this stuff. But you get us together, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop talking about it, right? I mean, it's. I think of the conference where we're at last. I mean, that was the big group, right? That's all we're talking about. I mean, it's very exciting. I mean, it's very exciting, very cool. All right, dude, I am so excited. I can't wait to see. I mean, I don't know what kind of Q4 you're going to have. I mean, you could do 7 figures in Q4 alone.
I just decided I was going to take Amazon up on the $250,000 loan offer.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I know if they've been out. I saw the offers. We got one. I see a lot of people taking them, so there's going to be a lot of inventory. That's a sign that there's going to be a lot of competition this Q4, which is always the case, but it's probably going to be enhanced. Are you going to approach it differently? Well, you already have because you've made a huge wholesale purchase.
Right.
What else are you going to do different?
I'll probably buy more volume.
Okay. So you're going to scale up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting to the point now where I'm pretty comfortable, and I want to start getting into liquidation. I'm going to ASD. That's one of the things I really want to focus on at ASD, is getting into some liquidation companies. It's something I've done. When I first started, I did auctions, and I actually met a liquidator probably 3 years ago when I first started Amazon, and I made a small purchase from him at the show, which was in, I think it was in Atlantic City. But then he doesn't, like, really have a website. He wants you to come in the office, and he's, like, you know, a 5-hour ride from me. So it didn't quite work out. So I do want to expand on that avenue a little bit.
I will give you some pro tips after the call because I have some advice for you there. I can help you a little bit. So, all right. Well, very cool. I wish you nothing but success, man. I just best way for people who want to get in touch with you. So your Facebook private message, I can put that out there, right?
Sure.
And you already heard he's going to be at ASD, so reach out to him in advance, see if you can hook up with him, because smart guy,
very smart guy. That's 100% business.
100% business. You're going to be talking a lot of bananas, right?
Right.
It's a great group of people. I mean, it's just such a great guy. I love Jay. I mean, I just really do. He's such a great guy.
Well, it's funny. The last one I went, there was like 60 people, and I kept running into the same six people.
That's funny. That's just funny. I see you have a lot in common with them. All right. I wish you nothing but success. You know, just keep in touch. I'll see you at one of these conferences upcoming. I can't wait to have you back and hear how the $1 million fourth quarter goes.
Okay, awesome.
Take care. Thanks. Okay. Great interview. Great guy. Reach out to him. He is going to be – he's been doing some conferences lately. When you see him, go and talk to him. You will be the wiser for it. It's a great, great, great opportunity to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about and will share with you. Candidly, openly. Great guy. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.